Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with Sarah Taxler. We talk about her new film, Tickling Giants. We talk about, we talk a little bit about everything. We talk about community and about comedy and about politics. We talk about how jokes and comedy don't really change the world or change anything really, but they become, you know, pebbles in the pond, the fly in the ointment, if you will. We talk about how comedy or jokes are, you know, kind of an easier delivery system for calling out hypocrisy. Sarah talks about how change is slow, but, you know, ultimately we do move forward. We talk about political satire and fear and oppression and leadership and democracy, all within the context of her new film, Tickling Giants. It's a great film. You're going to love the movie. It's funny. It's compelling. It's insightful. How often can you say that you just watched a fun film about oppression? We talk a little bit about outrage. We talk about hope. We talk about balancing. You know, how do you balance the two? How do you make change in this world? And how do you make a difference? So stay tuned. The film will be live and on iTunes on June the 6th, coming right up. And on the 13th of June, it'll be available VOD, DVD, and Blu-ray as well. TicklingGiants.com is the website. Interviews coming right up with Sarah Taxler momentarily. And don't forget DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my podcasting, my writing and my speaking. You can also support Face to Face through patreon.com there. And don't forget rabble.ca, where there's a whole other list of podcasters and some of my material and interviews are there as well. Sarah Taxler coming right up, Tickling Giants here on Face to Face.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, a filmmaker, a producer, a writer, I'm imagining. And Sarah Taxler is with us today to talk about her new film, Tickling Giants. Sarah, thanks so much for your time today. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me. I'm happy to do the interview.
All the way from New York City.
Yes, the other galaxy from Toronto, far, far away. No, not so far.
Not so far away. Yeah, certainly the same time zone. It's disappointing that we're not actually having the interview face-to-face, but you know what? Digital's not so bad.
Yeah, that modern technology has actually been my friend quite a bit with this movie. So I'm thankful for what we've got.
Thanks for your time. I really do appreciate it. So much to talk about. I mean, the film is, first of all, congratulations. I mean, love the film. Can I say that I enjoyed a film about oppression? Is that allowed?
Yeah, I mean, you're obviously a bad person, but you can say it.
That's
say it,
right.
Please do. Yeah,
my soul is black and tarnished. Yes, it's it's fun. It's a fun movie. It's interesting. It's compelling. It's funny, and yet so damn insightful.
Oh well, thank you. Yeah, a big goal with the film was. I feel like when people hear the word documentary, it's like really scary, and people are like, "I like movies,
right.
but I don't
yes.
like documentaries." And so, like, I I wanted to make a movie where even if it were scripted, the story would be good, good characters, good beginning, middle, and end, all that kind of movie stuff. And because it's about a comedy show, it's kind of inherently funny, and building off of that in the way that we tried to edit and just some choices with graphics and different things, we wanted to really build on that and make it a funny movie that's about a serious subject.
So you were up here in Toronto for the Human Rights Watch Film Festival at the Lightbox at TIFF, and been at other festivals. What's I mean, the reviews are, from what I've seen online, are stellar. What's the response been face-to-face, people, live, questions, et cetera?
It's been incredible. I've been very pleased, and I, you know, you don't know what the reaction's going to be, and different types of audiences, like international, outside of North America, people who are of Middle Eastern descent, Westerners. So we've had a really mixed viewing population, and I'm thrilled with how it's been going so far. We've had great questions. People, the kind of two things that helped me in the editing process were, I was asked, what do you want people to feel
right
when they leave the movie? And it's basically, like, you know, I wanted people to feel kind of outraged by what's going on, but I also wanted people to have hope. And that seems to be the reaction we're getting, which I'm really happy about. That, like, what's going on is outrageous, and the examples people in the audience point to in their own lives or other places around the world are upsetting, but, like, what are you going to do about it? And for me, Tickling Giants isn't just Bossum and his story. It's, like, in your own life, how are you tickling giants when you see an abuse of power? So
how do you think you balance that? I mean, that's tough to do, you know, to have an audience feeling outrage and kind of how is this possibly happening in the world today kind of thing on one level, and yet, you know, hopeful and kind of smiling at the same time. You know, I often describe myself as a hopeful cynic. You know, you get that dose of reality with hopefully this idea that, oh, yeah, I can change the world. It is about the splash and ripple effect, you know? But yeah, how did you dance between the two? Was it the subject matter, do you think? Or was it the... I mean, you clearly created a great community. There was a real community sense in the film, which I loved.
There was. And I think, like, one important thing is, in any movement or situation, if it's all relying on one person... No matter how great that person is, there's no circumstance, I think, where that couldn't fail. You know, it has to be about a community to continue. And so, like, even places where Bassem Youssef's story maybe isn't going the way you want it to, you see that there's a torch being passed on to other people. Mm-hmm. And there are other people who have enjoyed having comedy in their lives and enjoy the focus on free speech and want that to continue. And that's greater than any individual. So, like, when the movie ends, not giving anything away, he's a public figure with a public story. He can't do the show the way he wants to be doing the show in the country he wants to be on the air. But there are other people to carry things and to try and continue. And it's not there yet, but Bossum also says, you know, it's, a revolution isn't an event, it's a process.
It's a process. And well, I love the...
We're in the process.
I love the line, is it, and I think it's the direct quote, people can look back and say it's possible.
That's right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Which is...
Know something happens,
yeah,
and you know it's achievable, even if you don't have it right this minute.
So when you went in, did you know, and started to learn and research and meet and get a sense for what the heck was going on, was it always for you about more than the comedy? I mean, you're a comedy producer. You've worked with some pretty big names along the way. Was this just going to be not? We won't use the word documentary, I promise. A film, a film about a comedian, or did you know this had to be so much bigger?
I have to say, that was a really difficult balance for me during the course of the years we were working on it. When I met Bassem, he wasn't the superstar yet.
Right.
He had a show that was doing well on YouTube and had, you know, gotten a TV deal, was going to do this live show, but neither of us knew that he was going to become the superstar. So, yeah, my first initial thing was, wow, how interesting. A heart surgeon's doing a comedy show. That's so interesting.
That's a pretty good story in itself, right?
It's a good story, yeah. Right, yeah. Exactly. And so then the fact, I always thought that The Daily Show could be an interesting setting for a documentary, like following politics through a satire show.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, here's this same story, but with very, very high stakes. And so I was drawn to that initially. And then as the story became much more complex and as the stakes got dramatically higher, I wasn't quite sure where the comedy fit. And originally it was kind of more of a straight comedy in my mind.
Right.
And then as the story developed, it was clear that that was a real disservice to the story to not also focus on the drama of it. And so I think I had to kind of let go of that idea that this is just funny and silly and interesting, and then like delve into the deeper parts of it for it to be successful. So that was kind of the process with that.
There's something about Yusuf. There's I don't know if it's his eyes or what it is. I mean, really good looking guy, really, you know, just has a presence, right? But there's something, he's taking it very seriously, but you're just waiting for the joke. Right, that's sort
yeah,
of
yeah, you know. Well, I mean, that's like some people's personalities,
yeah,
right? That,
yeah.
You know, whatever the situation is, somebody lightens the tension by making a joke, and Bassem's one of those people. And part of why his friend suggested that they make a YouTube show in the first place was he just referred to Bassem as like a really great dinner party guest,
right?
The kind of person who, in any conversation, is going to add something fun and interesting and well thought out. And so he kind of has one of those personalities. And for him, the way to deliver that is through jokes usually.
I think it was him who said it's hard to control people when you're laughing at authority.
I don't remember the exact line on that, but that concept,
yeah,
I think is definitely true, that like it kind of disarms people, both like the people who are maybe the subject of the joke, but also just the people who are laughing. Like, you gain a little strength if you're able to laugh at something versus it just controlling you.
So do you think then, so having been a comedy producer for so long and working in sort of this world and living in the U.S., are people not laughing enough currently?
I think, you know, I've been a part of like different debates with friends about this, like,
yeah,
is comedy dead and all these things.
Right.
I definitely don't think comedy is dead in any way, but I do think
I hope not.
The more absurd life is, the harder it is for anything to be funny, because kind of two reasons, like the more absurd the truth is, what are you going to heighten that with?
Right.
And then also, do you even know which thing is a joke? Because the things that are true are really insane. So it's harder to know if something is a joke or not. Like, wait, that last thing that you said was not a joke and it was crazy, but this thing is a joke and it's crazy. It's a little harder to,
right,
kind
to
of
hold.
Tell. But I think, no, I mean, I would guess there's a lot of people around the world in this depression, and there's a lot of sad things going on that make it harder to laugh and more needed to laugh.
So he's been referred to as the Egyptian Jon Stewart, and you know, I know what comedy, the role comedy's played in my life, whether it's written or when it's delivered really well. Like, it can be incisive, it can be it penetrates, you know, it peels back those layers. It's like a great film or a great piece of art or a remarkable conversation. I mean, do you still believe that? Do you still have that sense of hope? I mean, it sure seems to come out in your film. And it certainly seems to me that Yusuf and his whole team seem to have this really hopeful sort of approach to satire that, wow, we really can change the world.
I don't think that jokes on their own change anything, but I think that it's a good way to introduce people to subjects that they may care about.
Mm.
I think there's like a saying that I heard growing up that was like, prayer doesn't change things. Prayer changes people. People change things. And I think
right.
the same kind of thing would apply to comedy. Me laughing at a joke doesn't really substantially change anything. I have to care about that subject, learn about that subject, do something about it, vote, whatever the action might be. But I do think comedy is a really palatable way to get new information. And it's kind of an easier delivery system
right.
for hypocrisy than
right.
some other things.
Right.
So, like, if I tell you that someone's a hypocrite, you may just disagree with me. You may think I haven't checked my sources. But if I can make a joke about it and show you two clips of that person saying fundamentally different things, then when you laugh at it, it kind of just makes it easier to go down for some reason. And I think for Boston, that was part of how he got some of his audience. Like, there were a lot of people who were just fans of certain politicians, and then he showed them that the people were not doing what they said they were doing, and it kind of stuck in a different way. And, like, for me, the hopefulness, this was a big debate in our edit, whether the story should be hopeful or not.
Hmm.
Because you don't want it to be so hopeful that people are like, okay, things are good.
Great.
Fine,
yeah.
You know?
I can wash my hands.
And
I can walk
about
away.
My day.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think, especially in documentary films, there are a lot of films where you're just like, wow, the world is over. Everything is awful. You know, and that can be paralyzing too. Like,
you get a free set of razor blades.
I can't do anything. Right. Yeah.
With your order of popcorn. I'll have a large and two razor blades, please. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, like, both probably ultimately have the same effect. When there's too much negativity, why do anything? And if everything's hunky-dory, why do anything? So for me, I don't know. Like, I do believe change happens one person at a time.
Right.
I think change is very slow, but
typically
we move forward with, like, sometimes big steps back, but we move forward. And Tickling Giants definitely takes on that point of view. Like, Boston said something that, like, every revolution throughout history has taken decades. Like,
right.
why should the world make an exception for Egypt? And I think kind of with every sucky thing around the world, you could look at it that way, that, like, there's so much progress made on a lot of social issues, and there are a lot of things that really, really, really suck still. So, you know, you choose which ones you want to look at, and you have to look at both, because that's the truth. But, yeah, I mean, I do think little changes that are good should be celebrated.
Yeah, sure. There's a great line in the film, and I think it was just, he said, there's no excuse for violence. Stop believing what you see on TV. And it was this whole, it seemed like that was almost like a turning point for him when he was trying to decide whether he was going to go on to, you know, live a life as a surgeon, which is hilarious to me. You've got this surgeon doing what appears to be incredibly important work to go into comedy, you know?
I don't know. I think a lot of us would say being a doctor is not that important. But, yeah, no, I mean, I can't imagine making that choice, but I think...
Yeah.
Oh, you're right. Like, that is really the exact moment. So he went and he's walking around these protests and seeing for himself that there's people who are just going out there because they care about something. And on TV, they're talking about these paid protesters. They don't even care about these issues. Someone who has an agenda is sending them. And he's like, wait, that's not what's actually happening. I've seen it with my own eyes. And the media is representing what the government wants people to hear, but I don't think that's the truth. And that really motivated him, not just to be critical of the government, but to be critical of the media, because the media was just kind of another arm of the government and presenting what they thought people should know or hear. So I think there's obviously a lot of examples now in the Western world where I think people are starting to think about those things. And it's kind of interesting because we weren't in the edit that long ago, and we're like, oh, those concepts are really complicated to understand. It's just never heard. Like, who could imagine suggesting there's a paid protester or
right,
things like that that
right.
just seem so foreign? And now in not a very long period of time, those are things you hear about all the time here, too.
Well, it is a different paraphrase on alternative facts, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's Boston was like, this is fake news.
That's right.
And saying that the news in some cases was very selective and in other cases just had an agenda that they were presenting that wasn't what he was seeing with his own eyes.
So Blossom also said, you know, that this is for me or for us really about holding authority accountable. I mean, this film is about so much, Sarah. I love it. It's a funny film. It's a documentary. But it's about fear. It's about oppression and leadership and democracy and revolution and about, you know, freedom and choice and responsibility. I mean, it's about all those things. But he says, he kind of brings it to down to, reduces it to this, we got to hold authority accountable. Do you think comedians are doing that in the U.S., in Canada, in the West, in Europe? Is that kind of comedy's job to some degree?
Well, yes and no. I mean, for me, I think that's a wonderful thing that can come out of good satire.
Right.
That you can see, and I mean, there's so many late night hosts right now who I think are doing that and doing great jobs at doing that. I don't think a comedian necessarily has an obligation to do that. I think their only obligation is to be funny.
Right.
But I think like a political satirist, yeah, that's what you should be doing. Like you shouldn't be doing softballs and rainbows and
right.
easy stuff.
Right.
Like if you're really trying to do political satire, then yeah, your whole job is to hold authority accountable no matter who's in charge, and you're not picking a team, you're just looking out for hypocrisy or abuses of power and making sure that there's sunshine shed on those.
Right. Is it Ann Deal? Is he one of the fans of the show that
cartoonist.
You yeah
right yeah he's yeah. a writer on the show
he's a writer on the show thank
cartoonist.
You yeah he's got a beautiful line in the film, he really does, and I can't remember what he was talking about, but it just hit me, you know, or we had a little bit of a conversation around hope earlier, and it sounds like you guys struggled with that and while filming and in the edit and so on, but he said the quote is, this is the beginning of our future. And
right.
I don't know. That just—it's so great. I mean, wow! Wouldn't that be wonderful? Sorry for going all idealistic on you here, but wouldn't it be great if that's kind of how we got out of bed in the morning? You know,
yeah,
today's the beginning
of.
There's
sort of that line that people say sometimes, like, "This is the first day of the rest."
That's
of
right.
Life.
That's right. Yeah, I can't remember the movie.
Every day is.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I think for him, he was talking about the start of the revolution
yes.
and the hopefulness that surrounds it, where it was sort of like, there's everything before this, and now there's this.
And now there's this.
And, you know, Andil was only in his 20s when the revolution began, and so he had never lived any other way. He'd never seen a different president. He'd never seen free speech or political satire on TV or any of those things. So it was a major life shift that, I mean, I think it's true what he said. You know, like that, both good and bad,
mm-hmm.
everything was going to change from that day forward.
So it seemed to me like, I'm not going to say democracy was the answer or democracy was the solution, but it comes up a fair bit in the film. It's kind of almost a subtext in a sense. Is that kind of what this group of people, these rebellious folk are after? Is that what they're looking for? Is it democracy, or is it just, a version of democracy that might fit in this kind of cultural context? I guess, yeah, it's a big question. I know, but I'm kind of interested.
I mean, as individuals, I think people want a change that focuses on more free speech and free expression. Like, I don't think on an individual level, it's like, I need democracy, and this is
right.
what it's structured like. And I think even to the point you were talking about Blossom being a doctor and going to the square and everything, and he's not, until all this happened and he got the show on YouTube, he didn't even consider himself a political person.
Interesting, yeah.
So, I don't think people are sitting at home every day, we need democracy, and this is why, and this is how we do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's people who really, truly in their everyday lives felt an abuse of power.
Right.
And felt like things needed to change. So I think in terms of what people on an individual level are after, that would be it. I think on a bigger level as a movement, you know, they wanted free elections, just a change. It had been 3 decades of one president. And then I think they wanted to... It's so hard because, like, democracy is... Blossom did this TV show for Fusion last year that was called The Democracy Handbook, and it was about traveling around the U.S. during our election season. And kind of the joke was basically like, wait, this is the democracy that we're shooting for?
Right.
So different countries have their own interpretations of democracy, sure. And I don't know if any of them yet have like the one example that everyone else should be holding up. But I think in Egypt, yeah, the push was a more democratic future.
You start the film with the warning, you know, if you're which is hysterical, by the way, if you're a dictator, please leave the room. Is that the warning?
Yes. Yeah, there's a little warning at the beginning that this may not be suitable for dictators.
So it's really interesting and very funny, and I love the tongue-in-cheek start. Don't you want the dictators in the room, though, to some degree, to watch this film?
Of course, yes.
Yeah.
And it's for dictators, I guess, is more the idea. Not that we don't. Honestly, that's been another thing that I've kind of learned during the screenings, that to my delight, I expected there to be a liberal fan base or maybe a Daily Show fan
this
base,
is good.
And that's been happening.
This is good.
But there have been all these people who are conservative and libertarian who've really loved the film, and I was invited on like Christian radio stations and conservative radio stations, and someone from Ted Cruz's presidential campaign called and said what a fan he was of the film.
Oh, wow, that's amazing.
Wanted to offer support. So people that I wouldn't think would come together on this. And I think, I've been trying to understand the reasons, and I think there's a couple, but like two of the main ones that I've observed are at all levels and all over the political spectrum, people do think that there's a lot of abuses of power going on.
Mm.
And also I think both sides of the spectrum, at least in the U.S., really, really care about free speech and never necessarily had a reason to actively think about it until recently. They never felt it was threatened before. And people on both sides think that the other side doesn't care about free speech.
Yeah.
So I think those are sort of the ties that are bringing people together. But like something that's been good as like a personal challenge and growth is some of the people who I've been showing it to, I kind of fundamentally disagree with on a lot of things.
Right.
And sometimes that's a little uncomfortable because you don't know what the questions or responses conversations will be like. But you're right. That's like the whole point.
Well, that's kind of the whole point. Yeah.
People who agree with me.
I'm so glad you talked about the different audiences, because that's exactly what I was trying to get to with the question. Of course you want dictators in the room, but the real reality is, are they going to listen? Are they going to leave at the 10-minute mark? Are they just going to throw up their arms and walk out, you know?
I think the like point I've gotten to is, you know, the quote-unquote dictator is not probably going to watch, but the person I really want to get are like the right-hand person of those people who maybe have a more nuanced, or at least the potential for a more nuanced point of view. And in particular, for me, this came up this year because the U.S. has this, you know, Muslim ban, basically. And the people in the film, and Bassem is in particular, like an example of the exact kinds of people we're talking about. And the film shows these very, like, funny, smart, normal people who aren't necessarily safe in their own country. And that also includes some people who worked on the film who now live in the U.S. And, you know, so that was like, for me, obviously when I was making the film, I couldn't have predicted any of that. And that wasn't an intention making the film. But now I'm like, I want people who maybe don't have a lot of exposure to the Muslim community or do have a fear about Islam to watch this film and see these examples of just regular people who happen to be from Egypt and be Muslim mostly. So.
How do you go, we're probably going to wrap it up here in a couple minutes, Sarah, but how do you, and I'd love to talk about your remarkable fake sneeze. Maybe we can do that in part two, but how do you go from a documentary or a film about balloon sculpture to political satire? And tell me a little bit about that film. I'd love to hear more.
Sure. Yeah. I directed a film called Twisted, a Balloonumentary with Naomi Greenfield, and that film premiered a decade ago in 2007 at South by Southwest. And we had a great run with that movie. And it was about people who go to balloon twisting conventions, people who make balloon animals.
Yep.
And it followed eight
of those
stories. Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. Yeah, it's the kind of thing where everyone's seen balloon dogs at a birthday or things like that. And the people in this film are that times 1,000. They go to these conventions, they make sculptures with thousands of balloons, and they're incredible, and some of them you can wear or sit on or live in practically. I mean, really, really incredible things. And we follow eight particular people who whose lives change because of the balloons. So, like, one woman gets off welfare and pays for her college tuition. One man finds religion. One couple finds love. So there's all different stories that we pick up on. But that was a slightly different story than Tickling Giants. But I actually did teach Bassem how to make balloon animals. So it did carry forward.
Well, you know, in a way, it sounds to me, I haven't seen the film and I look forward to it, but it sounds to me like it's same theme. It's about change. It's about social change of one kind or another. It's about moving forward. As you said earlier, it's slow, but, you know, it's eventual. And it sounds like each one of these people, there was significant movement in their lives, sort of the balloon sculptures and the metaphor for that, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, that movie was a lot about kind of the power of finding your passion and how your life can change as a result of that.
Cool.
And Tickling Giants, in a way, is building on that same theme with the idea that, like, the term Tickling Giants, which I want people to pick up on in their own lives, isn't about starting a comedy show. Like, that's
right.
Not something most people are going to do. It's about finding your own. Yeah. I mean, it might be, but
yeah,
for most people, that's not what it's going to be. For most people, it's just finding your own creative, nonviolent way to express yourself.
And
when you see an abuse of power.
It's so great, and there's so many ways to do that, it seems to me, you know? Good conversation, asking better questions, raising healthy children, et cetera. I mean, the list just goes on. You don't have to fly to the other side of the world and take a shovel with you, right? You can do it right from your own desk.
And
your Twitter handle.
Actually, the cartoonist who you were talking about earlier, the writer on the show, that was a big point for him. He's done a few Q&As, and it's that, you know, when you watch the film, his kind of worst version of it would be if you watched the film and you were just like, oh, isn't that sad? Over
right.
in Egypt, they have problems. You know, if that was the reaction, that would be really awful. It should be like, what can I do in my own community?
Yeah,
where
right.
are places we can grow and improve? And we're all struggling in different ways and have room for improvements. And, you know, now more than ever, we see abuses of power many times a day, and what are you going to do about it?
Well, I thought your film was just such a wonderful reminder once again of you know, we really are in this, all in this together, and there is similarity and difference, and not the other way around. And I love that. And so again, congratulations on the film. Talking with Sarah Taxler today here about Tickling Giants, her new film. And Sarah, tell us, so June 6th, it's coming out on iTunes, and 13th is also an important date.
Yes, yeah. So for everyone listening, a few things if you'd like to see the film or know anyone who might like to see it. First is ticklinggiants.com is our website, and we'll have links to all the ways you can see the film. But if you want to host your own screening, like a community screening or a college screening or a high school screening, we have a form that you can fill out at ticklinggiants.com. And if you just want your own individual copy, you can, on June 6th, buy the film on iTunes, and on June 13th, the movie will be on Blu-ray, DVD, and VOD on Amazon and lots of other sites, and we'll have all the links up at ticklinggiants.com.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thanks so much for your time today, and again, congratulations on a remarkable film. It's compelling, it's fun, it's funny, and I hope everybody gets to see it.
Thank you so much. I'm really glad you enjoyed it. Thanks for conversation.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.